the second stage tanks now pressurized. 35 seconds and counting. We are still going.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lindsay.
Are we beginning to see the formation of a fundamental shift in the American dream of home ownership?
A weekly mortgage market update.
20 seconds and counting.
Providing up-to-the-minute information.
The absence of Chinese investors in the real estate market, and they're really starting to have an impact, but it's only
on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
If you look at it on a dollar value, it's significant. If you look at it on a unit basis, it's inconsequential to the overall big market.
To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972.
Here's the deal. How much of the market, real estate market, is comprised of this type of property?
12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start.
And now, here's
five,
your host of Lickin' on Lending.
3, 2.
David Lickin.
Welcome to the podcast, everybody. It's good to have you with us. It's Monday, February 5th, 2018. This year is off to the races. What a wild year we are already off to. And we're thrilled to have you be here with us. So excited to be a part, have you be a part of what we're doing here. Again, we're a podcast that's created by mortgage professionals. It's for mortgage professionals, and we're getting an increasing number of real estate professionals. And we're grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information of what is going on in the industry, the mortgage industry specifically, the residential housing finance system in America, and do so in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. So appreciate, sit back, listen, and learn today. We've got an exciting lineup, and our special guest in the Hot Topic segment is Andy Christenberry. Andy is with Black Knight Financial Services, and we're going to be talking about e-mortgages, everything e. Very exciting to have him on here a little bit later on in the program. Lots of stuff going on. We're going to be talking about adoption of e-mortgage, where things are at. Let's have a big shout-out to our sponsors, ArchMI, the creator of the innovative RateStar program. Black Knight is a leading provider of integrated software, data, and analytics solutions that facilitate and automate many of the business processes across the homeownership lifecycle. We all know them with their MSP, which is their largest, biggest contribution in the industry, and that's a servicing system. But they got a lot of exciting things about what's going on. Also, Finastra, the third largest fintech company in the world with 10,000 employees in 42 countries and serving 9,000 companies worldwide. Thrilled to have the big boys in here with us. And we also have the Mortgage Collaborative, the power of the network. And we also have Thelma, the virtual electronic marketing assistant, a very efficient and effective way for you to get your marketing message out on an email platform. Yeah, email's not dead. That's right. Texting's getting up there, but email works. And Thelma does a great job getting that out. I want to say a special thank you to Alice, Joe, Andy, Alan, Les, and Rob for all of their contributions to the program. So without further ado, let's get on over and get the MBA Mortgage Minute with Rob Van Raphorst.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in the case of PHH Corporation versus the CFPB. It found that the CFPB violated the law when it tried to change longstanding RESPA rules through the enforcement process rather than by issuing a new rule or guidance. MBA released a statement from Chairman Dave Motley praising the decision, but also stating that the Bureau still owes the industry clear and constructive guidance on its views of the permissibility under RESPA of arrangements like marketing servicing agreements. In research, MBA's weekly mortgage application survey showed that mortgage apps decreased 2.6% from 1 week earlier, and the average contract interest rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage increased to its highest level since March 2017 at 4.41%. MBA's National Mortgage Servicing Conference and Expo 2018 takes place this week in Dallas, Texas, and MBA's CREF Multifamily Housing Convention and Expo 2018 takes place February 11th through February 14th in San Diego, California. Thanks for joining me this week on the Mortgage Minute.
Yeah. A lot going on with the MBA. We're thrilled with our partnership with them, and be sure to check out the MBA website for all the things they have going on. Some great webinars, great everything. And the Profit Doctor does a reoccurring webinar there related to accounting, everything accounting, and you got to check those out. But anytime he does those are popular webinar. So we are thrilled to have the partnership with the MBA. Say, a quick other thing I want to talk about that I'm going to be doing. Next week, I'll be speaking at the Texas Mortgage Roundup. It's in San Antonio, Texas, February 13th, 2018. It's going to be at Marriott Plaza in San Antonio. Head over and check it out. You can go to mortgageconferences.com. You can see all of the conferences I'll be speaking at, 17 conferences this year. So looking forward to speaking in San Antonio to many of the top loan originators that are there. So if you're in the San Antonio area or any of the markets around it, come on down. It's February 13th, next week, at Marriott Plaza. Let's get into what's going on with the macro part of the market. Very interesting where we're seeing the markets going. Again, there's many factors, as we're going to hear from Joe in a minute, that goes on that drives these things. But Les Parker always puts some music parody to the macro look. So Les, what do you have for us this week?
Thanks, Dave. This is Market Logics Live, sponsored by Loan Logics. Got a long list of ex-bankers. They'll tell you she's so tame, but they've left a blank space, Yellen, and they'll write your name. Janet Yellen, the reluctant hawkish dove, left the stage as expected with an almost hawkish statement last week. She missed an opportunity to lead the world to economic health, but like many pedestrians, chose the road more traveled. The road less traveled would have put her in the league of Paul Volcker. Jay Powell may pull it off if the board develops a hawkish consensus. He won't lead, but he will carry out consensus. Restoring King Dollar is key to restoring economic integrity at home and abroad. These views are my own. Go to loanlogics.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
I've got a blank space, baby, and I'll write your name.
They stuck that last little one in there. I love what they do over there. They do a great job of mixing in the music parody. Gary Catrabone does an awesome job there. Gary, cool job on your mixing all of that up. Great to have the partnership we do with Loan Logics and Les Parker and the team. Let's get over to our good friend, Joe Farr, who's going to give us an update on the markets. Joe, what you got?
We're up today. Have a couple 30 seconds. We have been lower during the day, though. The reaction to the ISM report was a little negative for mortgage rates, but we have since recovered the price. MBS prices are back above where they started the day, so that was good to see. Yeah, the ISM rose to one of the best levels it's been in years.
Oh, amazing.
And well above expectations. Today, stocks are volatile again, if you hadn't noticed. The Dow's down.
Yeah, we knew that. Yeah, we were kind of expecting at some point in time that, you know, how that can't to continue to that trajectory it was on was like unbelievable. So yeah, we can't see it. But looking, it's interesting to see what's going on today or what might dissipate. So let's talk a little bit about last week. That was an interesting
last week. You know, another bad week for mortgage rates. I hate to say, MBS prices fell another point for the year. We're down about 2.5 points. Rates probably 40 to 50 basis points higher during so far in 2018. Several things contributed to the drop last week. It started with comments from an ECB official talking about their bond purchase program and the possible need to end it soon after the September date,
right,
which is the current scheduled date to either do something different. And this is talk about closing that down, which is consistent with, you know, generally other central bankers removing accommodations. During the week, the stock market sold off. That didn't help. Unusually, you know, in the past, we've seen stocks down, MBS prices up. But since a lot of the reaction to the in the markets is due to concern about inflation, which is bad for both,
right,
is bad for bond certainly, and would likely have an impact on the Fed and them raising rates, which is bad for stocks. You know, during the week, just about everything that came out was a little better than expected, including consumer confidence, consumer sentiment, the pending home sales, ISM manufacturing, construction spending, and then finally jobs. All were equal to or better than expected, which also doesn't help from the mortgage rate perspective. The jobs report showed 200,000 net new jobs in January, unemployment rate of 4.1. But the issue that really captured the market had to do with the wage inflation number. It rose to 2.9% on a 12-month basis, and a lot of people were saying that's what motivated the big stock market sell-off on Friday, and certainly wasn't great for mortgage rates either. So in the big picture, you know, concern about rising inflation and less accommodation from central bankers is having a negative effect on the markets. You know, we're seeing the consequences of that. Now, looking at this week, Dave, there's not much on the calendar. Jolts tomorrow.
It looks like a light week, yeah.
A really light week.
Yeah, Jolts. We got Jolts, so.
Yeah, you like Jolts. And,
I love the Jolts. I always like to see what's going on with jobs.
There are a lot of Fed speakers, though, that are going to be up, and, you know, with the transition from Yellen to Powell officially taking place, we'll be interested in what the opinions of these Fed speakers, Bullard on Tuesday, Dudley, Evans, Williams on Wednesday, Kaplan, Kashkari on Thursday. So, you know, just a lot of potential
opportunities,
anyway, for there to be market-moving news. That's it.
That's it. Well, anytime you got a lot of people in the Fed speaking, there's opportunity for volatility. So, but you'll tell us all about it next week. So good to have you
all here
with us. And looking forward to you participating in the Hot Topics segment here, my friend. A lot going on. And are you going to be at the Austin Mortgage Bankers, the luncheon next tomorrow?
I am not going to, Dave.
I was hoping to see you there in person.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to. Yeah, come on. Show up. I'd love to see you, man. You've been there so much, they ought to give you an honorary luncheon just to the other. So, yeah, show up. Love to see it. Ari Karen, my friend, is speaking there, and I'm with Ari this afternoon, and so we'll look forward to hearing that conversation. So it's exciting. Hoping to see you tomorrow. Very good. Appreciate you so much, friend, and appreciate you bringing us the market update as you do faithfully each week. Let's move over to Velma, Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. Their services, very cool services. Are you using one of those expensive CRMs that your loan officers won't use? If so, then give my friends at Velma a call and let them help you create a customer journey that relies on the data and not on loan officer interaction. I encourage you to consider working with Velma to create a truly automated marketing experience for your organization. Velma makes marketing automation easy. Schedule a demo today at Velma.com, V-E-L-M-A.com.
The Mortgage Collaborative was founded by former chairman of the NBA, John Robbins and David Kittle, and leaders at the forefront of the diversity movement in the real estate industry, Jim Park and Gary Acosta. The Mortgage Collaborative is the nation's only independent cooperative. The Collaborative provides its members the opportunity to meet and form meaningful relationships with top mortgage professionals and leaders in our industry. In a relationship-driven business such as ours, often who you know is as important as what you know. To learn more, go to mortgagecollaborative.com or call Rich Swarbinski at 440-552-0691. The power of the network.
Yes, the power of the network, and also getting your emails out to all those people you want to stay in touch with. Consumer Direct, it's a great way to do it. All right, let's go over to Alice Alvey. Alice Alvey, so good to have you with us. And Alice is the CMB Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage, also known as Cosgrove Mortgage. Now, that's my name for it because Bill Cosgrove's the owner of it. So, anyway, saw Bill and Al up at the M&A conference. Fun getting the two of their perspective. It's good to have you here, Alice. A lot to talk about today. Can't wait for your segment.
Yeah, so as the MBA mentioned, right, the PHH cases was really the big news of the week, right? So for those of you who need a quick refresher on that, the PHH had created kind of a captive reinsurance firm to work with mortgage insurance companies, and they had had that for quite some time, but actually closed it down back in 2009. So they had had it for quite some many, many years under HUD. No one had cited them for anything. Then enter CFPB, and in 2014, CFPB starts taking a look at this arrangement and decides it's a violation of RESPA. So, and decides that based on really expanded interpretations, which if you want to go back and listen to many of the podcasts, right, that Mitch Keiter was on our show talking
about,
you can really get some in-depth background for those of you who want to kind of get all that back in the front of your brain going, what happened again? But so now where we landed was the ruling in favor of PHH, which essentially puts us back to where we were with understanding of, you know, what really is a violation of RESPA Section 8, what is an allowable marketing arrangement? What is reasonable and customary relationships, you know, between all of our industry providers that we can now go back to? So I don't know if this opened up a can of the wild, wild west, right? Marketing arrangements and agreements are all going to go back to the way they used to be. I'm sure people will start stepping there, you know, over time gradually, but it really does take the wind out of the CFPB sail, where they were basically doing what they wanted. They went out, did an audit, and had their own interpretations of the regulations, which were far stretched in interpretation from what we all knew to be, you know, a straight up, you can't pay illegal referrals under RESPA. So the constitutionality of the CFPB for now is not necessarily in question. That didn't get, you know, hey, the CFPB is not constitutional, which is one of the angles PHH was taken. Clearly, right, the president can only remove the head of CFPB for non-performance, but it really did help on the other side on defining RESPA within the law as we know it. We still need clarification. We still need Mitch, you know, to get to the bottom of this, and we don't have that fully explained, but at least we know it's not wide open for CFPB to do what they want and go back as far as they want when they come out to do an audit. So Dave, I don't know if you have any questions from the listeners calling in or if there were questions you had.
We've got some people typing on this. The first one, does this mean the CFPB is going away? The answer is clearly no. The question is does this mean the second one that's rolling in? They're starting to roll in there. Oh, I always get a lot of stuff after you do this. People go, I'll go back and listen to it. Don't ask this a question on the air. I said, no, I won't quote you. This does not do anything as far as really changing the fact that the CFPB exists, is going to be there. And we will, but it does kind of take a little of the sting. I'm reading one of these questions. I should ask it as a question because that's how it's written. This does take a little bit of the sting or the venom out of the potential fear of the CFPB and their overreach policies, what many characterize as their overreach policies. Is that true?
Yeah. Yes, I would say as we know it directly to RESPA, right? So this clearly puts them in the position that you if you're going to enforce something beyond the provisions and the historical reference documents,
right,
not litigation in other areas or other enforcement,
right,
actions. You can't regulate by enforcement action, right? You have to look at,
right,
what does it say in the law? What does it say in written rules that we have to work with? And put something in writing before you start to, you know, go backwards on what we already know is RESPA or overreach. So in this case, it was specific attorneys aren't going to all be going that, nope, you still have to care about all the other regulations that they could reach. I think this plays to that overall concern of could they do this with any regulation?
Yes.
The answer is no. They need to give us rules and regs to work with.
I'm getting a lot of comments. They're rolling in. One of them is, love Alice, always gives me the best. It gives us the news about the difficult things of our industry without, and makes me feel good as I listen to it, although it's never really fun when you talk about the CFPB. Another person says, could someone take Cordray out? And then, well, I won't tell you what the rest of them say. So anyway, a lot of frustration, pent-up frustration with the CFPB. Well, thank you so much, Alice. Really looking forward to having you participate in the Hot Topic segment as well, as we get into really talking about. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, you did have one other thing, didn't you? I forgot.
There were just a couple of. That's okay. Yeah. So the House Bill 1153, which is the Mortgage Choice Act, is due to be discussed today in committee. This is one that's really going to help us on the points and fees test. It's basically going to change the language for the bona fide third party charges, you know, which mostly is affiliate title companies. So this got passed by the House in the last session of Congress. We're hoping it gets forward today. So did want to get everybody an update that was moving forward.
Good. That
and,
is going on. Yep.
At least as of now, it's getting some activity. And then last but not least, HUD has put out an inquiry on manufactured housing and what could they do better with the FHA product to help encourage manufactured housing. Just wanted everybody to know that was open for comment and looking for your feedback on what could be lightened up. We always look for what can we ease up, right, and all the requirements for manufactured housing between foundation inspections and red tags and you name it, so that we can open up that door for financing a little easier through the FHA product. So that's a heads up on those other two things. And thank you, Dave, for the extra couple minutes.
You bet. Thank you. Our audience thanks you. You always give us such great information. Folks, we're going to have Alice back in the Hot Topic section. Yes, I know many of you want to get her feedback on the e-mortgage and what does that do in the regulatory side of it. So we're going to be right back after this brief word from Finastra.
Hey, thanks a lot, David. Finastra is extremely proud to be a key sponsor of the Lickinon Lending Program. Known formerly as DNH, Finastra's global lending division provides end-to-end solutions and innovation to the full spectrum of lenders, including independent mortgage bankers, community banks and credit unions, and even the largest banks globally. Learn more about how you provide an innovative digital experience for your borrowers by leveraging our multi-channel point-of-sale solution, which includes the new MortgageBot Mobile, by visiting our website at finastra.com.
Yeah, I appreciate Finastra and their team of professionals. Get out and connect with them. A lot going on there since the merger with D&H and MySys. Some exciting stuff happening there. So check it out at their website, finastra.com. And I guess it would be appropriate after a tech-type Pollock join us with the Tech Report. Good to have you here, Alan.
Likewise. Thanks for having me. So the Super Bowl, David,
super analytics, machine learning. I know you... You didn't care about either team, blah, 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 but you know what? Ever since your teams down there went out. But anyway, what can I say? Good to have you here.
So today's title is a good one. It's the Super Bowl, Super Analytics, Machine Learning, and Big Data. And, of course, the Rocket Mortgage commercial that we all saw. So first, let's say congrats to all of our Eagle fan listeners. It was a great game. I definitely don't want to offend any of our new listeners. And I bet the analytics thought so as well. I found online that the Philadelphia Eagles subscribes to EDJ Sports Predictive Tools. They collect data and they quantify analysis in the NFL. And so Philadelphia Eagles leverage their analytics to support everything from roster management to in-game strategy. And it's helped them propel to a 13-3 record and a chance in the Super Bowl, as we saw yesterday. They use analytics and instinct together to make sound decisions. And that article talked about the president of EDJ Sports, said that analyzing every team's risk management style on fourth down, especially better than its peers by a substantial margin, talking about the Eagles. And he says they've captured every value at every turn because they understand where the value lies. Yes. And even more interesting, another article, and if you Google, actually, Big BI and sports, there's something everywhere about how it's taking over. Nate McCurvey, Splunk's director of technical marketing, so Splunk is a big data company as well.
Right.
They plugged in 15 years' worth of NFL data into the company's platform, and they outlined that in 2016, when the Falcons were at their own 46-yard line with 5:21 to go in the third quarter, McCurvey's friend asked him to make a prediction. So he glanced at his phone. It showed that Atlanta would line up in the shotgun formation and quarterback Matt Ryan would pass short left. Although the throw was incomplete, everything matched perfectly. So the article goes on to talk about how football is complex. There's a lot of needs that are determined based on real time. That's right. Looking at environmental factors, looking at theory. And it talks a lot about theory, right? And so you can see I'm going to parlay into our industry in a moment.
Right.
Advanced analytics uses information like the players, even what do they eat for breakfast? What are their moods for the day? How early do they show up for training? That information helps these machines learn about each player and then the theory of why they play and how they play and the analytics around them. Similarly, Washington Post posted something that the NBA embraces advanced analytics as Moneyball movement sweeps pro basketball. And back to Philadelphia again, right? The 76ers GM talks about what could have been one of the league's worst teams or best experiments, and that data is just information. And what he says is that 50 years ago, you wanted to know if it rains, you look to the west, and now you just turn to your phone, and a million sensors can send a prediction, and it's way better than looking west. And so looking at that, the data that they use looks to support plays, the shots, the misses, the players, and then they use formulas and statistical models that will reduce risk and help them make smarter decisions, right? And here's another interesting stat, David.
Yep.
3/4 of the league's 30 teams have full-time staffers that do nothing but dissect numbers and analytics. So Moneyball, right? That's an interesting topic.
Yep.
Right? And I won't get into, we only have a short period of time. I won't get into the story of Moneyball, but You know, if you Google...
Great story, though. It's a great movie, yeah.
It is, it is. And it talks about the numbers, right, and how the numbers can help you find those inexpensive but valuable gems. And so if you take a look and you Google Moneyball and mortgage, you'll see a number of websites talk about the mortgage industry as a numbers game. If your payments, based on your payments and how baseball is very similar. But it mostly talks about the borrower, right, and how to play the game,
right,
of the rate market. But look at business intelligence in our industry, right? We've been looking at the data, the numbers. We've been looking at things like insights, you know, how many borrowers have come through the pipeline, where do loans go next, how many loans per processor, how many loans make it to underwriting. We even look at why loans were withdrawn or denied, right? And then we compare that data across business channels and other important data. And what's even more impressive is we look to become operationally efficient, right? That's the message this year that we're hearing at all
right.
the conferences
right.
and that people we talk to are talking about. So looking at numbers and analytics. And maybe, for example, picture this, before you run a certain third-party integration, the hard cost that you have to pay, right, or those expensive resources, the underwriters and so forth that you need, the credit officers that you need to run those loans and those borrowers by, why not use data to filter out those specific loans, the exceptions, for a manual check to be verified before you run those, right? And we know about day one certainty, and we know about loan advisor suite, all these great things, but ultimately our industry is looking to the acceleration of data collection and how it's fueling us to learn more about the data we can acquire and what we can do. And so if you circle back very quickly to the Super Bowl commercial for Rocket Mortgage, it had Keegan-Michael Key in there, and really what it talked about was teaming up to make mortgages simple. And the commercial used his witty humor, his funny charm,
yes.
to take a whole bunch of very complex things and make them very simple. So somebody would say something complex, he would jump in and say, oh, all they mean is that they're just going to, you know, cut your hair and blow it out.
That was
really and so it was very funny.
But yeah.
But the end of the commercial, right there in front of a loan officer, and he breaks it down and says, oh, you know, forget about PMI and rates and points and all this. All you need is the app. And it's super simple. Right. So as we look at our industry, our lenders are looking at data, vendors are looking at data, everybody's analyzing the industry. And David, that's something that you and I have talked about. We do very, very well. We're aligned with
yep.
some of our own technology, best practices, some partners that we have. So for those folks
yep.
that are listening, if you're interested in learning about your data this year, give us a buzz.
Give us a buzz. We'll help you. Get a hold of Alan or
Absolutely.
Get a hold of myself. Forward to it. Alan, your email address is alan@TMS-advisors.
Right.
And we got the Tech Stack Radio program coming up really, really soon, folks. I know we keep promising you. That is right around the corner. And it's a little bit delayed, but it's only because it's getting better and better and better. So looking forward to it. Thank you, friend. Appreciate you
Thank
being
you, David.
Here. All right, man. Talk to you in just a little bit here. Let's hear from Jim Jump of Arch MI with our valuable RateStar program. It can really help your business, folks. Jim?
Thanks, David. Let me tell your audience a little bit about Arch MI RateStar. RateStar is the most sophisticated pricing solution for mortgage insurance quotes ever built. RateStar has an advanced revolutionary design. It's simple to use, it's easy to access, and it's fully mobile. You can access it anywhere, anytime. RateStar provides a more sophisticated and dynamic pricing solution, far superior than conventional rate sheets. It's available on loan origination systems through many pricing engines, and it rewards your origination of high-quality loans, again, with our most competitive rates. Of course, RateStar is backed by Arch MI's people power, providing superior support and service whenever you might need it. For more information about RateStar, please go to archmi.com or archmicu.com for credit unions. Thanks, David.
You bet, man. Appreciate you, Jim. It's great being with you in Phoenix here and speaking at your national sales meeting. A lot of fun. Let's get over to the Profit Doctor. He's got so many letters, and now he's adding PhD, literally standing a PhD behind it. Andy Shell, you never may cease to amaze me, friend. Good to have you here, friend.
Hi there, Dave Licken. It's always such an awesome Monday I get to have here speaking with you and all the team on Licken on Lending. So yeah, I got a couple things to talk about, and I am going to the TMBA luncheon because the only thing better than talking to Dave Licken is listening to Ari Karin. So
I'm looking for Ari. Yeah. Good. We'll see you there then. Good, good. We got to get Joe to come. Joe, put a little pressure on Joe. Joe's got to, you know, come on, Joe, show up.
I know.
Put a little pressure there. So what you got for us today?
Two quick topics. One is the locked pipeline profits. We talked about this a little bit last week, locked pipeline profits. So remember, a locked pipeline is a pile of papers. It's commitments we've made. It's not a car, a truck, or a boat. It's not something that you can put your hands on. It's a commitment. And the accountants, want us to put the profit we're going to make on our locked pipeline on our financials. So they want for us to count the profits in our locked pipeline. And so people have been doing it this way now for 4 or 5 years, and people have been counting the locked pipeline profit at like 3% of the pipeline. Well, if you really trace through revenue and expense, you'll realize that on a locked pipeline, you might make half a point profit. And so counting 3 points profit is like way overstating it, but that means that we got way more capital, and we like having capital or net worth because that's what the agencies look at. And the CPAs let us do this, so, you know, why not? So the group that I'm working with has been saying, you know what, that's ridiculous to have 3 points profit on your books from your locked pipeline. It should be much less. You have to apply more cost. So the issue that's come up recently is the government has now said that if you count profit in your locked pipeline, you're going to have to pay tax on the locked pipeline. This is a new thing. So if you count the profit, you got to pay the tax. And so that means that if we're going to put 3% of our locked pipeline profit into our numbers, then we got to pay taxes on it. And so we've got to figure that out. And obviously the quick, easy answer would be, well, let's just increase the cost and lower that 3% down to 1%, and we'll just call it good. Well, the problem is we've been doing it at 3% for the last several years. If all of a sudden we drop it down to 1%, that means our capital goes down by 2% right. of the locked pipeline, and that's bad because that means for warehouse line lenders it could show a decline. Yeah, for Fannie, Freddie, Ginnie, yep. show a decline. And there's rules about how much your profit can decline year over year, so you could breach debt covenants by doing this. So there's a lot of moving parts. The CFOs at these mortgage companies are running around spinning the plates, trying to keep all 15 plates spinning at the same time. So if you see the CFO walking around scratching their head, you're probably just as well to leave them alone. They got a lot on their mind. You don't want them to throw a plate at you.
Yeah, I have a hilarious statement. First of all, I was listening to you, because I go back and listen to our own podcast, because there's so much information here. So Saturday, I was listening to you talk about interest rate lock commitment while I was in Home Depot picking up filters, air filters. So I was listening to you talking about IRLC. And so we got a text from someone. They go, I thought I was being so funny, and I brought it up with my CFO. I said, hey, by the way, how's our IRLC? And he looked at me with curiosity. What do you mean? He says, oh, I mean, I'm sure you know about our interest rate lock commitment. I mean, how we position it? He said, I got in trouble for asking the question because I embarrassed the CFO. He says, our CFO needs to listen to Andy Scheld on the Profit Doctor. The Profit Doctor. I thought I got the biggest chuckle out of that. He says, I got in trouble. I wrote it down. I thought it was great. And so it's good stuff. You got to listen. Pay attention. You can also go to the website. You can download all the things that Andy said, all the things that Alice said, we have each of them broken out now in our new website. So we have people going back there. Andy, yours is a popular place to go. Everyone's getting good hits there. So it's good to have you with us. I appreciate you. I'm real interested to have you join in on the Hot Topic segment.
Can I tee up the Hot Topic just a tiny, tiny bit?
Yes,
so,
please do.
So I grew up, so I'm a little bit younger than Dave, which means that I'm old. But I grew up in commercial banks where it's all about negotiable instrument law. And in a negotiable instrument, that's a note. It's a promise to pay, just like Federal Reserve note. It's a note. You sign it, and it's a promise to pay. It's a legal document. And when you transfer that note to someone else, you endorse it on the back, or you have an allonge attached, and that creates what's called a holder in due course standing for the subsequent holder of the note. It's a huge,
right.
huge, huge thing, having a holder in due course standing. So I can't wait to hear Andy tell me about how are we going to have a holder in due course standing with an e-note. Because e-mortgage, we get it, that works. But when you're standing in front of a judge on a judicial foreclosure proceeding and you've got a handheld app in your hand, show them, see, judge, they signed. It's like, is it really? Did they really know what they were signing? Did they really sign it? Are you entitled to be the holder of that note? Do you have holder and due course standing? So that's a huge question that I can't wait to hear Andy.
We're going to get
Chrisbury
talk
about.
What a great way to tee it up. Yes, it's like a good book report. I can't wait to ask this question. So we're going to be there in just a minute.
Appreciate it.
All right. You bet. Thank you much. We're going to take a quick break to listen to John Maynell give us the KPI of the week. John Maynell is the VP of Client Services for Motivity Solutions, another Black Knight financial services company. So, John, which of the many wonderful KPIs do you have for us this week?
Thanks very much, Dave. Always great to be here. And this week's key performance indicator focuses on one of Alice's favorite topics, namely the underwriting process. And the KPI is submitted to initial decision. This is generally measured in hours, and you can either use this to measure an entire department's average turn time or even individual underwriters. Very effective if you're using balanced multi-metric scorecards to fine-tune the behaviors of individual staff members. This measurement can also guide an organization to areas upstream from underwriting that contribute to this initial cycle time, like processing, setup, or even sales, to help ensure that people in those areas produce complete and accurate files that make the absolute best use of the underwriter's time. So the broad scope makes this a very powerful metric and shows yet again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, Dave, I will thank you again and turn it back to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it so much. Check it out, MotivitySolutions.com, or call them at 303-721-9000. They've got a whole bunch of KPIs, and it's a great way to go about it. Measuring your business, the dashboards they have are just tremendous. And they are so good that Black Knight says, we like them, we're going to buy them. That's a good deal. Appreciate it. Could have happened to a greater group of people. Let's get over to talk to our hot topic guest today, who is also with Black Knight Financial Services, Andy Christenberry. So good to have you here. So let's let our listeners get to know who you are. You're Senior Vice President, Managing Director of Black Knight, and you oversee and manage all the operations relating to lending solutions in the business side of Black Knight. Tell us what your responsibilities are at Black Knight and let our listeners just to get to know you here for quickly.
Hey, thanks, Dave. I appreciate you having me on the program. Look forward to spending a little bit of time with you and your listeners. My background with Black Knight came via acquisition, as occurs quite a bit, from the old E-Lynx days. So my current role in the organization is managing all of Black Knight's fulfillment capabilities. So we do and continue to provide electronic delivery, electronic signature, paper fulfillment when that's necessary to complete a transaction, as well as some pre- and post-funding quality assurance processes. And we kind of wrap all that up and support not only the Black Knight platforms, but also agnostic solutions for the industry.
You're doing a great job. Brenda Clem, who's a dear friend who used to work with me in the consulting business here at TMS, has joined up with you guys, and she has just got a passion for our topic today. So be sure to say hi to Brenda when you see her there in the halls. You know, a lot of our listeners, Andy, are not aware of what is an e-mortgage, what is meant by that. So would you tell our listening audience what an e-mortgage is and some historical perspective on this topic?
Sure. You know, in its simplest terms, you know, when you go in and get ready to execute your mortgage loan in the bank office or possibly your title agent's office or your attorney, you know, it's taking that big stack of papers and creating them, allowing you to review and execute them after you sign them, the ability to transfer, just as our friend Andy was just talking about, and store them all electronically. So you remove that big stack of papers, and has a lot of benefits associated with, you know, doing that in terms of giving you a little bit early view into reviewing all of the paperwork around a loan, you know, business streamlining your business operations in terms of efficiencies, which everybody is after these days,
and
a whole host of benefits, and we'll talk about that. But you know, the journey towards an e-mortgage really has been around for quite some time. It's been nearly 20 years since the foundation.
Yeah,
a long time, right?
Yeah.
You know, there was a couple of key things put in place that just sort of paved the way to let us get to an e-mortgage. There were standards formed by organizations such as BSMO, which has been around since that time. Certainly from a legal and a regulatory standpoint, there were a couple laws passed that allow electronic signature, and you'll hear people reference both eSign and UEDA, which are two of the legal instruments that allow you to sign documents electronically. And then another key kind of component allowing a path to an e-mortgage is the organization MERS. You know, we had talked a little bit earlier in your segment about the ability to, you know, transfer the holder of that lien or that promissory note. And it's MERS provides functionality to allow you to manage both the registration of that electronic view of the note as well as transferring it among lien holders. So all of that, believe it or not, has been around going on 20 years. And it's just, you know.
Yeah. In fact, we started a committee back in, gosh, it was the early, mid-80s, where I was chair of a committee called the ECHO 1 Application and Oversight Committee. And then in that committee, we started an X.12 standard. Mm-hmm. So I've been aware of this for a long, long time. We had fantasies about it, but it just gives evidence that things like this, they're complicated, as the Prophet Doctor brought up, and they can move at glacial speeds. But it's actually happening, and that is very encouraging. But given that we've been talking about e-mortgages for so long, what's your view on why it has taken so long? Why hasn't this happened yet?
Well, you know, you hit on a couple of interesting points. You know, it is complicated. You know, there are a bunch of different participants that are involved in a mortgage loan. You know, from the time that you list your property with the realtor broker or the real estate broker, and if you're applying for a loan, that whole process implicates different companies, different people that need to do different things. And when you're talking about bringing together all of those participants in a single workflow and getting them to agree on this is how we're going to do business and this is what I require out of that transaction, that's a really hard thing to do. And
oh, yeah.
You know, I think it's finally gotten to the point where, you know, people are really very much focused on increasing their efficiencies and reducing the risk associated with the mortgage lending market. And, you know, it called it fortuitous timing, but all of the planets seem to be aligning at this point in order for those parties to come together. So, you know, it's been a journey for sure.
It has been, and it's been, again, the complexities of the paper system has been so entrenched in our industry. Given that history, what will it take for a true e-mortgage to gain broader adoption within the industry?
Well, you know, we talked about, you know, some good standards being in place. You know, there's still a little bit of work to do in a few areas that are directly related to conducting an electronic mortgage. A great example is, how do you notarize the documents that need to be notarized
right.
when you close a loan? And, you know, that's still a standard that is pretty much up to the states to define how they want to do that or if they want to do that. So, you know, there are various different ways to notarize documents, you know, whether it's online or remote notary, if you have to do, you know, a camera-based solution, or if you need to sit down in front of somebody that actually watches you sign the document, because there are still jurisdictions that require that. So, you know, there's still a few areas that will, you know, kind of are the long pole in the tent in terms of widespread adoption of e-mortgage, but they're, you know, they're making steady progress.
See, I want to toss the mic over to Andy, because I think there's a lot of people that are confused on some of this. And Andy, I think you might have a question that you might want to help for our audience to get some clarity on this. I'll let you jump in. Prophet Doctor?
Well, hey, Andy. Thanks for being on the program. And so if you think about the mortgage process from application through closing through securitization, so these mortgage notes, the promise to pay from the borrower collateralized by the mortgage or deed of trust, depending on the state, end up in a mortgage-backed security. And so there's a lot of pieces about that. Like, for example, the securitization process requires a custodian to review all the documents, and part of that review is the note and the deed and the transfer papers and all that. How do you maintain the Fannie Freddie Ginnie Mae securitization process and the role custodians play when you remove the paper?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, there's the investment community and their appetite to consume electronic notes has really been, you know, part of the challenge with widespread adoption. You know, there are an increasing number of commercial investors now, warehouse lenders, that are, you know, signing up and agreeing to take electronic notes as investments in their portfolios, so that's a huge step forward. So number one, you know, you have to be able to identify, you know, the investor that's going to accept that kind of a loan transaction. And then number two, if you have all of those things lined up, you know, there's very particular ways that you have to go through both registering that electronic loan or that electronic mortgage through MERS. And then MERS also is the independent entity that is responsible for transferring lien holder, you know, through document and custodial transfer of that instrument once it's been registered by the parties. So there is a mechanism, you know, to allow for that. You know, everybody's agreed to that is the way that they're going to do it. It's very well vetted. But, you know, at the end of the day, the parties really need to agree that that's the way that they're going to conduct business.
Well, you know, I keep thinking back to, like, Dave and I have been talking about e-mortgage for at least 10 years, and Dave was on the original MISMO committee way back. So we've been talking about,
Before it was MISMO,
20 years. So it's like, are we there yet? 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 So I kind of, when is enough? You know, I thought we were getting close in 2007, and then, you know, kaboom. So are we really there yet?
Well, you know, there's certainly been some limited success. You know, you'll pick up a paper and you'll, you know, read about transactions that are taking place in, you know, North Carolina and a few other select jurisdictions. But, you know, it's just sort of limited success. You know, MERS has been around for quite a while, and there certainly has been, I would say, an upward trend in terms of the number of transactions that they facilitated through the system. But, you know, it's only last year, I'm talking about 2017 at this point, there were only approximately 20, 25 companies that were registering e-notes through MERS. You know,
wow.
And that's just a really minority percentage of, you know, the available participants in the industry. So, you know, that being said, interest has increased for sure. They have a bunch of integration efforts in place that will allow the registration and transfer of e-notes. You know, so, you know, it's like we said earlier in the segment, there's been a huge increase in, you know, people that are interested, lenders, settlement agents, investors that are interested in making this work well, because now people are really realizing all of the benefits associated with it. So I'm encouraged over the past, you know, year.
Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, there has certainly been a lot of noise that's starting to appear in that. And is it, like Andy was talking to you and you started to introduce it, but I want to really clarify, should people be taking notice? Is this really now the time that this is going to be happening?
I think it is.
Right. We
know,
had that tipping point, that book. Remember that book, The Tipping Point, it talked about, I mean, there's some level of adoption. All of a sudden, the teeter-totter tips over and everybody races into it. Are we at that point, Andy?
Well, you know, I think we're getting there. You know, like I said, there's a bunch of things that are coming together at the right time. You know, the data associated with, you know, creating and closing a loan in terms of a mortgage, it's really, the paper artifacts are almost secondary at this point. You know, it's really driven with the data around the transaction. And the earlier you get access to that data, starting at, you know, the listing of the property or the seller contract, you know, allows you to have a very good record all the way through the process. And that's really what I think is giving comfort. So, you know, I do think the time is now. You know, a lot of those barriers are being removed.
Now in mortgage banking isn't exactly like, it's a switch being switched, but I think we are. We're really seeing it. Everyone is getting behind it. Alice, let's run over to you, and then we'll get over to Joe and then Alan with some thoughts on this, some questions that you have, Alice.
Yes, I want to go back to the point. I want to go back to the part about the state's involvement in this, right? So we can do e-signed documents throughout our process, but the real barrier to this is a lot of it is not in our control unless we want to throw out a lot of lobby money to get the states to adopt this, because that's really where the ultimate roadblocks start to lie to have a fully true e-mortgage, as you described, with the notary being accepted, and I can go automatically to a recording world. So I'd love, you know, when we say we're at a tipping point, maybe that's industry adoption that we want to push this, but, you know, when I last I looked on a map that was dotted with what states this is easy, and it there aren't a lot of dots. So what's the best way we can track the legislation improvement on this, or do you have any thoughts around that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I think one of the points that does provide encouragement is, you know, just the amount of legislation that's in flight that, you know, are addressing these concerns and establishing the ability to, you know, to electronically notarize a document. So, you know, we pay very close attention to that. And, you know, one of the interesting things is where, you know, either it has already been approved or where they are pursuing legislation to approve, you know, use of e or remote notary, online notary, is really, you know, where a lot of transactions are being completed. So, yeah. You know, it's encouraging from just a number of transaction standpoint. It may be not that many dots on the map, but where the dots are, it's very important. So that's it's encouraging.
Do you see any resistance from the states on this? I mean, is it something they don't
exactly
want?
Where I was going to go.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a couple of states that are not as far along as others, and there's certainly other, you know, legal considerations or process-based considerations, you know, for example, in the state of California, you know, where there are additional steps that need to take place, you know, from the process overall. You know, so there are, it is going to take time, you know, as David indicated, this is banking and it doesn't really, you know, move at the speed of light. So I would imagine that it's going to take a few more years, but, you know, you're able to kind of demonstrate progress in taking a look at those jurisdictions that do support all of the components. You know, it's not a difficult business case to take a look at that and demonstrate where that makes sense. And that gives you a little bit more ammunition to encourage those that aren't there yet.
Let's get Joe in here. Man, time flies when we're having these podcasts. Joe, jump on in.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Well, I was on the board of MERS in the early 2000s, and it sounds very similar to what you're going through right now. It was very frustrating to see such an efficient, a process creating tremendous efficiencies that were not able to be realized until, you know, the volume of people doing it, and, you know, you just had to have a lot of people doing the same thing. But it was odd to find that the biggest hurdles came from, as you were talking about, you know, the state and local, the county recording offices. Do you see other, I mean, this is going to disrupt a lot of the process. Are there going to be hurdles along the way that are hurdles only because you're disrupting them out of business?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, it's certainly something that we think a great deal about. And, you know, our approach for, you know, addressing those types of things are really not to require any of the participants to change either the technology or the processes that they use today. You know, if you think about all of the different ways that the participants in a loan transaction do business, you know, we feel the only way that really is going to be able to achieve, you know, broad adoption, you know, really transform the industry, is to be able to facilitate it using the best way. You know, if a jurisdiction supports, you know, e or online notarization, and the lender can produce an e-note, and the settlement agent or closing attorney can facilitate that close electronically, then hallelujah, you know, we'll do an e-mortgage. But if one of them cannot, you know, you have to have the ability to back down and do an e-closing or a hybrid e-mortgage where, you know, most of the loan can be closed electronically, but, you know, there's still a couple of components that may need, you know, manual notarization, and you put it all back together at the end. So, you know, there has to be some flexibility, and it has to be usable for the industry. It's the only way it'll really achieve adoption at volume.
Great, great points. I mean, that's a good question. I'm always learning as much as we do these interviews as any of our listeners. Alan, you've been you approached this from the technology side. Do you want to jump in and add some perspective? And then I got one last wrap up question. So, Alan.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, David. You know, I think the industry as a whole, if, you know, 2017 was to be the year of e-notarizations, right? And, you know, a digital mortgage conference, 2 years e-notary and others, and now you've got Pavaso, and you got right, all these folks out there, and it sounds like you guys have been moving forward with enabling your own client base and new customers with your solutions. What, you know, I guess two questions. The first one is there a technology challenge? Which I don't think there is, but I'd love to hear your perspective on that. And the second thing is really, what do you think it's going to take for states to adopt this? Because I think we're ready. I think our borrowers are ready. I think, and based on your technology decision, my opinion is that technology is ready. But really, it's, you know, we do have to push, and I think the industry is ready. But what's your angle on that? What do you think?
It's a great question. So, you know, I do think that the consumers are ready. You know, you take a look at, you know, the proliferation of the fintech providers from, you know, providing in just an outstanding consumer experience, you know, from the beginning of the loan process. You know, it's become an expectation, you know, that they have in order to be able to, you know, facilitate a loan electronically. So, you know, the rest of the industry does have to get there. You know, I would offer that it's not a technical challenge or, a technology, a barrier in order to make it all happen. You know, technology has been around for a long, long time. You know, it's really enabling all of the different people that participate in that loan a way to, consume doing business that way in their operations. You know, it's, everybody talks about disruptive, but, our view on this is you almost have to be anti-disruptive. You know, you have to allow them to do business in the way that they need to do business. You know, the settlement community doesn't want to have to change the way that they close a loan to support, 12 different solutions that their lenders are putting on their doorstep. So they need to be able to normalize the way they do business.
So you'd say it's partially adoption and alignment as well, right? How do we best use that within our organization and our relationships and partnerships?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, alignment is really a good way to characterize it. You know, they have to be able to gain efficiencies for them to be motivated to do it. And, you know, when you have to do business, you know, a dozen different ways, then, you know, it's actually demotivating. And that's really not going to work for the parties. You know, all the parties need to be able to use the utility.
You know what? I think it takes leadership. And I'm thrilled to see Black Knight, which is clearly the leader in our industry when it comes to everything related to the back office and functionality within so many functions you automate within your suite of products. And I'm really excited about Tom Sansone's leadership there and what he's doing to bring these separate silos of Black Knight into one consolidated platform. So there's a lot of exciting things going on. So if you wouldn't mind, let's wrap it up with this. What is Black Knight doing with regard to the e-mortgage and e-closing to really accelerate, especially as it comes to accelerating the adoption? So I thank you for being there as a leader in it. I'm grateful for Black Knight doing it. Give us some insights. How are you going to pull this all off?
Well, it's an interesting thing for sure. You know, it's kind of great timing. You know, we announced today, actually, the first phase of our LoanSphere Expedite Close solution. And, you know, from my perspective, it's really only a company like Black Knight that can bring all
can
of these
it.
Different pieces
yeah.
together. You know, we have platforms that support the collection and management of data all the way from the time that a property gets listed, you know, through our servicing platforms and through investor delivery. So, you know, it's a great thing to be able to reach into and incorporate all of those different pieces into a solution that we believe can be transformational for the industry and really establish more of an industry utility. So we're very much looking forward to bringing that to market and demonstrating the success that can have. You know, I think that's really just going to, you know, increase adoption and motivate others to experience that type of technology. So we're looking forward to it.
And I'm thrilled to have your leadership inside of Black Knight there, bringing this together, making this happen. And you've pulled together an amazing team, including Brenda Klim and so
yeah,
many
she's
there.
The best.
How can you guys are doing so much to inform the industry and work behind the scenes. How can people learn more, get a hold of you to learn more? And will you work with companies one-on-one to really help make this happen for them and be that kind of resource?
Absolutely. You know, we have and will continue to be involved in, you know, all of the industry-based efforts that are really pushing, you know, e-mortgage technologies and processes to make them successful and, you know, including MERS and PREA and MISMO and EZRA and all of the different, you know, acronyms of standards-based and advocacy organizations. But, yeah, we'd be more than happy to talk to anybody that's interested in number one, you know, that type of solution and how they can make a difference in the industry. Be happy to talk to anybody. My email is achrisandberry@bkfs.com, and we'll get you in touch with our crew.
Awesome. Well, I want to take a moment to thank you for coming on. I'm grateful for Black Knight for many reasons. The leadership they bring to our industry, the amount of solutions, the depth of the solutions they have, and now specifically this initiative with eMortgage and eClosings. Andy, thank you so much for coming on, being with us today, and sharing with our audience about this important topic. And folks, it's happening. Get ready. Get a hold of Black Knight. Sync up, team up with them. Great company, great group of people. And you won't be sorry you did, because if you don't, you're going to find you're delayed in your processes. And to stay current, you need to be on board with eMortgage, eClosing. So get on board. Thank you so much, Andy, for being here, friend. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you having us on the program, Dave.
You bet. I want to tell you about another podcast we did on Saturday. We now have Lickin' on Leadership. It's a new podcast we started 3 weeks ago. And this last week, Alice Alvey and I have a very close friend, her old business partner, Jan Wetzel, and Mark. And by the way, I have Mark Jones, who's co-hosting that podcast with me. And Mark and I interviewed Jan, and we played that interview on Saturday. So check out Lickin' on Leadership. It's a great series of podcasts. And the series of that, the purpose of those podcasts is to educate people on what leadership is about. And what we're doing is we're recording all these industry leaders that have been out there for years and are retiring and going away. And before we lose that knowledge, we're capturing at least some essence of what they think leadership is and bring that to the podcast. So go check it out. Lickin' on Leadership. It has its own website. Folks, we're out of time. Actually, a little more than out of time. So have a great week and look forward to seeing you back here next week. Thank you.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.